We tell stories to share the human experience.
No matter what form it takes.
Actor, photographer, theatre maker, musician, whoever is trying to be heard.
We can't stop telling stories. There's no end to them.
By telling stories, we connect to each other and create a sense of community.
This is an opportunity to share stories from a talented and diverse range of individuals, in the hope it provides inspiration and knowledge.
This is a podcast about Australian storytelling in all its forms, hosted by two Australians in the arts industry.
Welcome to the Act of Storytelling. Hi, everybody.
I'm Nick Kane.
And I'm Lauren Bailey. And welcome to our first podcast for 2016.
Finally.
Yay. Firstly, we would like to show our respect and acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, of elders past and present, on which this podcast recording today takes place.
Yes, and a big thank you for your patience as we get started in our third year of the podcast. We were hoping to be back, Lauren, in February, but due to some exciting opportunities and some sound issues, we think we're gurus at this sometimes, but we're not always. We're not. We were back a little bit later than expected.
And we hope in the meantime that you've been enjoying the Cultural Temperature blog on the Act of Story, on the Act of Storytelling website. And of course, our wonderful blogging team, which are helping us to build the artistic community of Australian storytelling. Well, yes, that's indeed. Our goal at least.
Awesome. And we do appreciate all your readership, listenership and comments. Now, as we head into 2016, we thought we would try something a little different for this month's podcast. We do have some wonderful guests, and yes, you did hear right, that was plural. We have Chad O'Brien and Emily Wills, a performer, filmmaker, and a print and textile designer, respectively. These two make up a great collaborative storytelling team.
Now, they originally hail from Perth, but they both relocated independently to Singapore, which is where their paths crossed. And needless to say, the rest is romantic and creative storytelling history. And having recently transplanted themselves into the cultural hub of Melbourne, we thought it would be a great opportunity to sit down with them not long after their arrival and to hear about some of the challenges they've faced so far, their inspirations, and some of what they're hoping to achieve in the months ahead.
Yes. And we thought at this juncture as well, 2015 was a massive year for both of us in terms of creative learning and achievement. And we know that the year is nearly halfway through already, but we thought this might be a really good opportunity to mix up our podcast format a bit. And, you know, on the other side of the interview with Chad and Emily, we bring Chad back and he interviews us about what we got up to in 2015 and what we got out of 2015, as well as what we're hoping for the year ahead.
So sit back and enjoy. So here we are on a impromptu sunny Thursday afternoon in Melbourne and Sydney with the very lovely Chad, what's your surname?
Chad O'Brien.
Chad O'Brien and Emily Wills. Have I got that correct?
Yeah, you do.
And of course, Nicholas Kane and Lauren Bailey. Was that smooth enough? Do you want me to do
that's
again?
Enough. Hello and welcome, Chad and Emily. How are you going?
Hey, Nick.
Good. Thank you.
How are you feeling about this? Is this something that you've done before, or are you feeling like you're just stepping out into unknown waters?
This is definitely unknown waters for me.
Well, we'll try to take it easy on you.
You can't see my eyes.
Actually, I think if you took a photo of the recording studio from your perspective, Nick, it might explain to people why it is such uncharted waters for all of us.
So I think I should explain for the guests right now, everyone, Lauren, Chad and Emily are all pretty much hugging together so that I can see them through the Skype screen.
Pretty close.
It's a beautiful thing.
Up close and personal, which is a great way to be. So we are sitting down with you guys this month. It's quite exciting. It's the first time that we've sat down with two storytellers together.
Yeah.
So that's a new thing. We wanted to talk to you about where you're coming from, what you're doing here and how you find working together. That's sort of it in a nutshell.
Let's start. I'd like to know from both of you, first of all, separately. Let's start with you, Chad. So you're an actor, but tell us a little bit more about what you do generally.
My background is as an actor. I'm also a voice coach and recently a filmmaker. As a storyteller, I come from a very much an independent point of view. Mm-hmm. So just using what I've got with what's available, be that time, money, restrictions and opportunities.
So resourceful in the way that hopefully. You go about it.
Brilliant. And so would you add to the list of actor, voice coach, filmmaker?
Writer, producer.
MacGyver. Awesome.
Does everything. Jack of all trades.
Pretty much.
How about you, Emily?
So my background's in fashion and textile design. So normally my method of storytelling is through colour, texture, fabric, garment shapes, and the styled image, I suppose, so through fashion photography. But what I've really, well, what we've really enjoyed doing more recently is finding a way to merge where we've come from to do something that's a little bit more maybe interesting or off that specialist sort of disciplinary area in which we base our practice in.
You guys are here, of course, in Melbourne because you've just relocated from Perth. Can you talk to us a bit about what you were doing in Perth, where you were before that, and why you decided to move?
So before we came to Melbourne, when we actually made the decision to come to Melbourne, we were in Bali, and we were trying to figure out if maybe that was an area that we could move to. We'd both been in Singapore for 6 years, and it just no longer felt like home anymore.
Interesting.
And we both really, there's something about Bali that we both found special and interesting, but after not having working visas and looking at all those kind of international concerns, we finally just decided that it's probably easier to come back to Australia, and we wanted to move to a city where arts was a big part of the culture.
Would you add anything to that, Emily?
I think Bali gave us the space to talk about those ideas of collaboration and doing something where if we were in a city as we were before, sort of life gets in the way and you don't have that time, space and breath to really start discussing some ideas that you might like to do. So it kind of gave us an opportunity to chat, speak, experiment, kind of figure out what we wanted to do and how we wanted to do it differently.
Being in Bali did that.
Yeah,
because Bali, unfortunately not for us, but it is an environment where it's kind of cheap enough to get a good sized space and really have a crack at sort of a collaborative studio type environment. Our problem was we just couldn't figure out the way to make it financially viable for us. Right. So that was sort of how the discussion, well, that was a big ground for the discussion, trying to figure out what can we do, how can we survive here as artists and continue to progress our own artistic work.
And so Brisbane was in the mix for a little while?
Purely based on weather.
Oh!
That's a good reason.
Having come from the tropics, the idea of the Melbourne winter terrifies me.
But we also hear good things about the Brisbane art scene.
True.
Yeah.
And being able to get in. I think Singapore was really nice for us, being able to get in at more of a ground level. Like you can, or we were given opportunities where we could come in as almost a guru in your field, having not had much work experience, but you were given a long leash and lots of money to develop ideas and projects, which was, well, we'd never had before. So that was super exciting. So the idea of going to a city where there wasn't a massive influx already of established art and culture was super exciting as well. So
yeah, and that's so different to most of our guests who are here normally saying, I'm trying to make art on nothing at all, but it sounds like in Singapore there was opportunities and money to back it up, which is really cool.
Well, that's the great thing about Singapore as a art space. It's really starting to come into its own as a country and as a culture, and it's a really important thing for Singapore to start to create its own voice.
I guess for Singapore too, just to keep on that subject, is for a very long time it didn't know who it was because it had sort of old Singapore. We have spoken about Singapore before too.
Nick gets quite excited about this topic too, so I should just warn you.
Because it's got that two separate sort of styles. You've got old Singapore and then you've got this kind of westernized corporate Singapore, haven't you, that's sort of clashing against each other constantly.
But that's come from Lee Kuan Yew. He's recognized that for Singapore to like, man, he must have had some vision. Like, as far as like politicians go, he was an artist of a politician in his long-term vision.
You spent 6 years in Singapore. You didn't feel like that was home anymore. You came back to Perth, where you're both originally from, for a six-month period.
Yeah, I had a six-month lecturing position at a university that I'd been invited to come back. So it was a good opportunity for us to cash back up, hang out with family and friends, and decide or plot the next move. I think for us it was really just a working 6 months, but ended up being a little bit exciting because we reconnected with friends in industry, and then these projects, the fashion films, were sort of born out of that opportunity presented by working at the university and reconnecting with friends that were more established in film predominantly, that we hadn't seen for many years. So it was really nice.
Well, so maybe this is a good point to talk about the films then. I was having a beer with you on Tuesday night, and you guys told me some amazing stuff about just reaching this point. And you were saying earlier about that idea of an independent viewpoint and looking around you at what was possible. Can you see if you can bring back some of what you were saying on Tuesday about, you know, how this came about and where your minds met in the mix?
I'll start. For me, it started when we were visiting Singapore after being in Bali, and we watched an exhibition of student fashion films. So there were students in a fashion communication course creating fashion films, and while they were aesthetically beautiful, cinematography, the styling, the makeup, everything was amazing visually, they were lacking concept or story.
Interesting.
So me looking at it from an acting point of view, going like, oh, it seems like you could probably do more with this this medium, like as a different way of communicating the point of view of the designer.
And so just for my own benefit here too, Backyard Creatives is you, Chad, or both of you together?
Well, it's something that I started. Mm-hmm. I came up with the name when I was 13.
Yeah, right.
And basically it was, I guess that was one of my earlier dreams of just going, oh, it'd be really cool to have like a company that did production, whether it's theater or film or music or writing. And then it just kind of took a back seat because it was just, it was too bigger of an endeavor for my teenage mind to even comprehend
Fair
or
enough.
Fathom.
Yeah. Yeah.
But now as a graduate actor looking for work, and a big part of me is always interested in creating my own original work. It's something that I've talked about with Emily before, and she's definitely a part of what Backyard Creatives is now. Yeah. And probably the big instigator of going, well, Chad, that's not a bad idea. Do it.
So going from that initial point of you had this realization about the aestheticism of what was being created by these students, and you brought your idea of, yeah, I could bring some story into that. It was quite a short time frame, I believe. You know, what were the next steps to actually getting the project up?
So it would have been about 9 months later, and
it's like a baby. That's fantastic. Mm.
Yeah.
There it is.
We had moved back to Perth, and I was working at Curtin University in the fashion department. So I had some wonderful students that I was working with that I thought would be an amazing opportunity if we could work with them. They had existing collections and concepts, and it would be a really nice sort of testing period.
And I had no work at the time. I was in Europe visiting friends and traveling around, and Emily goes, oh, Chad, you know, we've got these students. Maybe you should create an application. You've got a train ride for the next hour. Send me the application for the students by the end of the train trip. I was like, oh, okay, sure, okay, I'll do that. And we looked at it, and the idea was always from Emily that the films would get screened as a part of the graduation showcase. Mm-hmm. So the timeline was kind of set for us where we had 3 weeks from the application
deadline
sharing for students to submit their application. Then we had 3 months to produce whatever films we decided to produce. So, yeah, we had two students put forward their designs, Shannon Malone and Lucy Mitchell, and they talked about their concept and their points of inspiration for their collection. And we had a little chat with them about that and what that meant and how we could maybe translate that into story. And then I had a month and a half to write and do all the pre-production.
Yeah, right.
We had a week shoot scheduled, and then I had a month to do all the editing or organize the editing.
So the first film was shot in 6 hours, and the second film was shot in...
It was over 2 days, but...
Really? I was going to say eight.
Probably 8 hours, maybe 10 hours over 2 days.
Well, you know, it's quite remarkable for me to sit here and listen to this because, of course, the film that I'm having post-production that will be finished in a couple of weeks' time, I wrote December 26, 2014. And a lot of people say to me, that's really quick. And I'm like, oh, God, is it? So it is just really interesting what you can get up. And, I mean, you've seen one of the clips. I was lucky enough to watch a few of them last night. You've seen one of them, Nick. But they're quite amazing pieces.
What I loved as well, and without giving too much away, is just the different mediums that you were using on film so that, you know, to help tell the story. So I think that was a really beautiful thing in watching it, going... You're right, there was so much visually going on and the setup was so beautiful that it feels like almost like an art installation at times too, with a wonderful story running through it. Do you care to talk a little bit about, I guess, the process of how you started to design that, whether that's something that runs through all the films or, you know, just maybe a little bit about your creative process making the films?
Sure, that multimedia actually came from one of the inspiration points from Shannon's collection. So she, as part of her application, she had a few of these photos scattered throughout, which was photography by Henry Irving, I think, of post-war workers. Basically, they're just in front of a photographer's drop and in their work uniform.
Yeah, right.
And it's quite just stark, but you see all the character of their world in these clothing.
Yeah.
So the idea of that photography and came from there, and I think that workwear is reflected in her garments.
Yeah. Is using traditional workwear, so iconic workwear garments like dungarees and aprons, but in non-workwear materials, so no denims or hard wearing materials.
Yeah, so I took that as a research point. So I went back and researched the origins of dungarees and denim, where it's come from, why it's a part of the fashion culture now, and why it was a part of workwear back around that time of that photography. So that's what led me to start looking for. Oh no, actually, Em started talking about a meeting point of these older styles of working and like a futurism of what these. I'm not sure. Em talks a lot about some really great ideas.
She talks a lot.
And one of them sparked this idea about it was something about the, I guess, using these references from the past, where are we going in the future with these same styles, fabrics,
tradition
and designs
of clothing, the culture of fashion, it based in history and also in, you know, communicating cultural semiotics, really. So how clothes can say what they mean.
That was a great point for me to get out of looking at things from just a historic point of view, and what can I include from modern technology to elevate or highlight some more things about the origins of these designs.
It's a real synergy, isn't there, between your world, both your worlds, isn't there, when you're starting to look at the fashion element and then you bringing that to life, Chad, in story and research. It's really lovely to hear.
And it's beautiful because it's layer upon layer upon layer then. And because it is clothing and her design concepts, it's suggestive of something without having to be a story that has a finished ending. But because you've added a narrative to the film, it's suggestive of a number of different levels of story, and one of those is for me when I watched it, not knowing anything you've said now, is what we perpetuate as a society. Yeah, I clearly really liked that clip.
Yeah.
But it was so interesting that some of the other clips that you haven't seen, Nick, and maybe you can talk a little bit about, but they're very different, all of them.
Em mentioned last night that she felt that the first two films we made are very reflective of who the designers are as people, not only people. As designers.
Mm.
And really they were made specifically for them.
Yep.
All the ideas, all the inspiration came from the same inspiration point for them, and they're made for their garments.
They're not practicing designers that have clientele or a market sector specifically that they're designing for.
Gotcha.
So it becomes quite personal, and the story then becomes quite personal as well, because it pulls on their memory and links with how they perceive themselves in the fashion world.
Yeah, and how they want to continue progressing their own work.
We have spoken a little bit about your world, Chad, but Surface 122 is something we want to talk about too, which is, I guess, we've already started to cover a little bit about the fact that it's sort of in this fashion space that you work, Emily, and I know there's a few different elements to Surface 122. Do you care to take us through just really quickly the genesis of 122?
Sure. So Surface 122 started in Singapore. 122 is the latitude of one point of Singapore. started when I was working as a lecturer in fashion textiles, and the textiles industry wasn't really very established. It had moved away from primary production, but design hadn't really stepped back in. So there was a chance for me to help develop that program. And in doing so, finding lecturers and educators to help teach the curriculum. And there was quite a lack of fashion textile designers in Singapore. But what there was were a ton of fine artists who worked in textiles, fashion designers, screen printers, fine art printmakers, embroiderers, people who were working in different sectors of the industry, but not specifically fashion textiles. So Surface 122 started as a collective for people working with surface design. And we would hold events and do exhibitions in Singapore. So when that moved, it kind of morphed into a design studio. So at the moment I work as a freelance surface pattern designer, predominantly in screen and digital print, and teach workshops in surface pattern design under the title of paper pattern print. And the idea is to really get anyone and everyone being able to understand the basics of creating a pattern, and in an ideal world then having a house with matching wallpaper, carpet, furnishing, clothing, accessories, and going bananas with pattern.
Wow.
Patterning nation.
So the print becomes a personality in a lot of ways for
Absolutely. People. Absolutely. So the starting point is very often through design communication. So working with keywords as how they describe their style, how they draw that, what colours reflect that, and then going through that design process. So it's amazing. Even people that swear they can't draw come up with the most amazing patterns at the end.
And what would each of you say, we'll take the other one into a soundproof room, if you could say the best thing about your artistic partnership and collaboration, what would it be?
I think it's the nature of that multidisciplinary inquiry. So although Chad is trained as an actor, he's also equally interested in visual arts, image, and doesn't shut off from wanting to learn more about art or design. So it's not necessarily linear. Like we can, between the two of us, we can bounce around and play in a very big space that we probably couldn't do on our own.
Yeah, great.
I'd probably say the best thing is the support. In making the fashion films, in the few days before we filmed the first one, is probably the most terrified I have ever been. Like, not sleeping, and worried about obscure things like, I bet you no one's going to turn up. We're going to get have all this gear. Like, you know, I've met our DOP twice.
Who's amazing, PS.
And he is amazing. Love James Barker's work.
Yeah.
But It's just like, I've just had these irrational fears, like it's all going to fall apart right now. So having someone who can see that part of the process and encourage you to go that little bit further when it gets a little bit scary, stay in the ring, take that extra little bit of risk, tell you when you're completely out of field, come back down to earth. I find that kind of collaboration helps to keep things moving along.
Fantastic. It's so true, isn't it? When you've got someone to bounce off and to work with, and especially with the relationship that you've both got together, it's just, I mean, creative industry's hard enough when you're doing it by yourself. So to have someone else who you really appreciate what they do, the way that they think, it must just be a real luxury to work together and create.
I think so, because I think we both probably look at things that we do and go, we're both well and truly capable. But I think in that own private world, and it's just your own voice saying, oh, I don't know. Yeah, go for it. No, I don't know. And the other person's out there going like, it's simple, just do it. Helps. Do this.
Even little things like when you're tired and you just go, I don't know what the next step is here. And then you've got someone lovely like Lauren Bailey who goes, I know exactly the next step. This is what it is. Or, you know, I'm sure you guys have that same relationship.
So you guys get
where,
it. You get it. You understand.
Yeah, or vice versa because it so often is you too, Nick. This is a mutual love podcast interview.
Correct.
And I imagine you guys have had a similar experience to what we've had now that we've been going for 2 years on the podcast, Nick.
2 years. Ooh.
Is realizing that, I mean, I feel like we've got to a point when you're not sure what the next step is. You know that we'll figure it out.
Hmm. So speaking of next steps, a really good opportunity to talk about what are the next steps for the both of you in regards to individually and then I guess as a collective as well.
Well, looking into my magic
Yeah, just
ball,
little questions, guys.
the future seems to hold much mystery. so this year for me, I'll be continuing to work as a freelance textile designer. I'm attending Sortex in New York in May to sell my designs with an agency, so Nerida Hansen Print and Textiles. There's a bunch
that's
of
exciting.
Us going.
So exciting.
Yeah.
Haven't been to New York, so that's going to be awesome. Hopefully pick up some lecturing, so I'd love to get back into teaching in fashion textiles. And then creative projects, please.
Mm.
So for me, the whole premise of surface pattern design is to cover things in surface pattern design. So murals, public art, start creating more products, getting patterns on things would make me extremely happy.
Watch out, Chad. The next time I see you, we're covered.
I've already got a couple of pairs of shorts that get frequent Instagram photos.
I love it.
I think also next steps is like figuring out a new city. We definitely want to keep going with film productions. We've got a few ideas in the works. Figuring out what to do with our three current films. So we've already entered them for submission to the Berlin International Fashion Film Festival.
Oh, wow.
And I think there's probably about at least 15 fashion film festivals that I found globally. So we'll give it a crack through there and probably just look at other short film festivals as well. I don't feel like they're exclusive to just fashion film.
Not at all.
And then, look at the next films, the next stories, the next projects with who we meet here or continuing our collaborations with people in Perth.
And so as artists arriving in Melbourne, I know you made the decision late last year that you would be relocating. Do you have any ideas about the industry here or how it will be different to back home in Perth?
I think I connected last year with Big Hearted Business, so Claire Bowditch and Pip Lincoln.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so I got to hang out with them in Bali on a retreat, which was pretty cool. so probably since that has been an absolute end goal for me because the majority of people there were from Victoria and Melbourne and they're such a fantastic, beautiful, amazing support team as well. So
yeah,
that's great.
I think coming from Singapore, it was such a business-centric city.
Yep.
Coming to Melbourne, where my feeling and impression is that it's a much more arts and entertainment-focused city, so it's going to be cool to be around that primary energy for a while and see what spawns out of that.
Yeah, that's super exciting. Well, I wish you all the best for the next year. I hope it's a really cracking one. Thanks for joining us. It's been a real pleasure to have you on the podcast. And
our first guests for 2016.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah. Great. And we'll have to check in and see how you're going in a year's time and see how the moves happened.
I mean, I'm certainly in a position where I want to be creating more work. You've talked about creating more work. We're trying to build a community. We may very well end up working together. So
we're in.
Who knows?
Exciting time. Yeah,
the future is exciting.
# collaboration is key.
Thanks, guys.
Excellent. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed the chat with Chad O'Brien and Emily Wills. We're now going to...
I'm hijacking the show, is basically what's happening.
Yeah, that's pretty much what's happening.
Thanks, Chad. I was waiting for you to step in.
Here we are. I'm in Melbourne. We're all in Melbourne. This is pretty crazy. This doesn't happen very often.
Fairly exciting.
It's very exciting.
And we were going to, me and Lauren were going to interview each other, but then you were there, Chad, and we said, you know what? Here's a guy that could interview us.
Why not?
Voice coach, performer, filmmaker extraordinaire.
That's right. Yeah. And interviewer now.
And Perthling, I think we...
Perthling.
I'm not sure which comedian I stole that reference from, but...
but he's not happy right now.
Yeah. Get copyright on that one.
You guys ready to get into it?
Yeah, let's get into it.
I have to admit, I'm a little bit nervous to be on the other side of the question and answer scenario.
So in this episode, we've got Nick Kane and Lauren Bailey, artists, active storytelling, regular hosts.
Yes.
First question... Mm-hmm. What did you learn last year?
I feel like there should be a buzzer. Yeah. Okay, you go.
I was going to say ladies first, so ladies first.
Oh, wow. Okay, what did I learn last year? I had a huge journey as a storyteller. Mm-hmm. I was involved in production on a feature. I also took part in Ale T. Miller's PhD research project. But I think the biggest breakthrough that I had in terms of revelations and determination in my pursuit of story came when I got to the point where I was about to shoot my short film that at that point was self-funded, looked around me, realized I had no money and a few other challenges facing me, and also realized that I was going to do it anyway. That was definitely a turning point for me. And I just think it's really interesting that in the end, the film is nearly finished. For every challenge that we've faced along the way, something equally fortuitous and amazing has also come to pass. I feel like I was presented with this fork in the road, and I picked the direction I went down, and I've been rewarded for picking it. I don't know, rewarded by whom, but
rewarded is the right word. I was just gonna say, like, you worked hard. I think the product that you've created is something pretty special. People get to see it shortly as well, which is super exciting. So, and I love that thing that you say about that for every hardship, you feel like the reward has been as equally as beneficial to you as a person. So it's nice. I think it is a reward.
Yeah, it's a great revelation as well. Has that affected you in how you go about telling your stories now, or how you might continue to tell your stories?
Yes. So all the things that happened last year sort of culminated in this story, and I've written a couple of plays with the wonderful Adam Cass, but this is the first thing that I've written on my own. So this is my story that I want to tell to the world, and realizing how important it is to me that I tell it, that has definitely grounded me as a storyteller and has changed the way.
That's huge.
Huge. And giving you the belief that you can then, you know, you were doing it with other people, the writing, the co-writing, but now having that sort of singular thing to hang your hat on, now anything's a possibility for Lauren Bailey, the writer, as well.
Yeah, I think that's true. I've often talked about wanting to think really big on the podcast and stretch. Well, I think I've talked about it. I've certainly thought about talking about it, wanting to stretch the idea of what I'm capable of. And it's certainly raised the bar in that respect.
And you mentioned that it helped you know what your story is that you want to tell. What are some of those markers that are part of a Lauren Bailey story?
This is a huge thing that really consolidated itself for me last year. And it's really simple and really big for me simultaneously. It started to land when I was in Bali doing the work with Ali. I had this realization that I'm quite determined in the way I work. I bring a lot of will and a lot of energy to my work. And I realized that I can be as committed as I feel I am when I do all of that, but also do it a lot more simply.
Mm.
And part of that is this thing about trusting myself, just to know that I'm present and I don't even know, it's not even necessarily something that I can intellectualize, but just to know that it requires a lot less outward energy.
That's almost nice that you don't intellectualize it, if that makes sense.
Well, so that's what started to come into place in Bali. And then I realized I was doing some journaling and learning pretty much every day something new to try to get this film made. And I started to realize that at any point that I checked into the story, for whatever I needed to convey to someone, the same energy and feelings and words and things came up for me in the way I wanted to direct it and the end result. And I think it's something about how I believe my story should be told, that it should be light and warm and hopeful and funny and heartfelt and empowering, and that any character I play or any story I write or anything I do, I will approach it in that way, and that's what the heart of it will be.
Mm-hmm. That's an awesome energy to bring to the world.
Mm.
Thanks. This is quite exciting.
Yeah, yeah. You like being on the other side of things. Here we go.
No responsibility.
Say whatever you want. Yeah.
How about you, Nick? What about your last year?
Well, it was a big year too, right? I moved cities, and Chad, you would know a little bit about this.
I'm at the start of that.
Exactly. One of the things when you move cities and, you get away from your normal circles, the normal places that you like to go, the locations that you know, it really puts you out of your comfort zone. And I use the analogy that I felt like an ant in this big city, and I felt very almost invisible at times. And it really made me sort of sit back and go, well, who am I as a person? And then also on that, who am I as an artist as well? And I think the thing that I learnt professionally last year was to have a value and a respect for myself as an artist. And that probably came in one particular moment where it was sort of late last year and I had an opportunity to partake in a feature film. And my creative producing work had gone quite well in Sydney and things were going really, really well. And I'd signed up for all these projects at the start of this year to do. And then this opportunity came to do a feature film, and it's one that is on my bucket list to a substantial role in a feature film. And it came up, and the people that I was going to work with are people that I love and people that I respect. But I did actually, you were one of my calls, Lauren Bailey. I was tossing up with this idea of whether I was going to do the project because I had signed up for all these creative producing gigs, and I didn't want to call anyone and go, because that's not really me. I don't want to go, sorry, I know I signed up for all those gigs, but you know what, I'm not going to do them. And had to call people because I don't think at that point I really had developed that respect or value for myself that I would be able to say, sorry guys, from the creative producing world, I need to go do this, and them to stick around. I thought they'd just go. So I called Lauren Bailey and I called a few people, and I believe you were the one amongst a few, Lauren, who said you'd be silly not to do this in a lot of ways.
I don't know. It was actually really interesting for me when you called, because obviously if I was faced with that dilemma, I'd need to look at it from the inside. Yeah. But I could just look at you and hear how excited you were about the project and know there was no conflict for me because I could look at it from the outside.
Yeah.
And so my advice was just talk to them, because I think you'll actually find that they'll want to support you. When you see someone on their journey doing the thing that brings them most joy, you want to help those people.
I think it's a really common thing for artists, emerging artists, to go through. Because you can't not be doing something as an emerging artist until someone, I guess, opens the door to you for that next step.
Yeah.
And I suppose you'd already been given that next step in a creative producing role.
Yes.
It would be different from your regular acting work.
Yeah.
And a different artist would go, oh, I'm loving where this producing role is taking me. I'm going to let the feature film go. I don't want to do the acting thing anymore. I want to invest energy into that.
100%. And so, but you know, I knew in my head what I wanted to do, but at the same time, having the respect for myself as both a producer and as an actor, to be able to call people and say, look, I have to do this thing. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But will you have me when I come back?
Yeah.
It's a very hard call to make.
Sure.
Because you go, well, do they respect me enough? Do they care about my work enough to want me at the other end? Yeah. And luckily they did. And I got the opportunity to go do the film.
Yeah. And I suppose you also get that chance to really bank on yourself.
You do. Because, you know, especially with the feature, I was like, I've never done anything of this type of caliber.
Mm.
Over this amount of time, you know, in this format. So it was, there was moments where you go, what am I doing?
So I know I'm not the interviewer per se, but do you feel like you made the right decision?
I definitely made the right decision. Definitely. Because I think making those calls, I realized that people did value my work as a creative producer. And then going and doing the feature film, like, the experience was amazing.
Mm.
Being able to work with such lovely people, but also testing yourself, because there's times over when you're filming for a month where you're like, what am I doing? Do I actually know what I'm doing right now? Is this going to cut together well? Well, you know, and you go through the dips, but I think at the end of the day, if you're coming from a place of, as you were saying, love, and you've got the will to do something, and it's coming from a really good place within you, then I don't think you can go too wrong.
Yeah. And is that creative producing still a part of your world?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. So I'm lucky enough, as soon as I finish the film, I go back to the creative producing. So I'm quite lucky in that sense,
Awesome. So, new city.
Mm-hmm.
You've been there for a year and you're starting to find your place. You're not feeling like an ant there so much anymore?
Maybe some
ant
kind
man.
Of... Yeah, Rather caterpillar, than maybe okay. slightly larger. No, I'm still trying to find my feet, but it's a big change, as you'll find.
Yeah.
It's a big change and you get split away from your normal creative resources and friends, and it takes time to build that up in Sydney, and to takes time to make sure that you don't lose the connections in other cities as well.
Yeah, sure.
But I still think I'm on that journey, and I think this year we'll probably see that grow even more.
Sure. And so from that year,
mm-hmm.
how are these things affecting you as a storyteller now?
Oh, okay. The big takeout for this is, as I was sort of saying before, when you're taking away from your usual friends that are artists and storytellers, and you feel like you're alone in a big city, you find out how important it is to have consensus in storytelling.
Consensus?
Yeah. This year I'm on a big drive to really tell stories and get as many people as I can involved. Mm. And I don't know what that is. I think it comes from the fact that I feel maybe a little bit alone in Sydney, but you know, there's a particular project I want to work on where I want to get writers involved. I want researchers involved. I want anyone who wants to be a part of the project and who's willing to be a part of the project to get involved. Because I think that's how you tell great stories. And
sure.
It's
storytelling, I think, has always been a community-based thing.
100%.
And if you're honest in your storytelling, other people will recognize those same elements in their own lives and want that story to be told.
Yeah, so true. That's where I feel like my
storytelling. So when you're hiring, just remember.
Well, hopefully everyone around this table will be involved at some point.
Awesome. So you guys, in the last year, which storyteller has inspired you the most?
Lauren Bailey.
Lauren Bailey.
Well, yes, Lauren Bailey.
Yes.
But I was also referring
you.
To you go first. I'll talk more about you later.
Oh, well, I'm very flattered, Nick. I mean, I've got a longer answer than Nick.
Yeah. just one name, Lauren Bailey.
Well, I mean, we're joking about it, but this podcast has been amazing because we do have the opportunity to sit down with storytellers every month.
Yes.
And it has just grown my perspective of what storytelling is and who's involved. And so that is constantly inspiring. It's inspiring working with you, Nick.
There it is.
I have a lot of I have a lot of wonderful friends and peers who are doing amazing things. I think in my sort of personal world, though, something that came out of probably the beginning of last year, maybe late the year before, when I was working on my first significant role in a feature, was the three producers of that are musicians, Lynette, Vince and Michael. And they originally had these songs they wanted to sort of create a film to go with. And then they spent a few years on it and redrafted it. And it is now a feature film that will hopefully be out in the next couple of months.
Crazy.
But they had never done anything to do with feature filmmaking before, and they just made it happen and were so calm and loving and respectful of each other. So I think they really, obviously, you know, when you look back and you're like, oh, that probably helped me when I definitely think.
Yeah, it spurred you on.
That helped me have the confidence to then go ahead with my own film.
Is there a moment that you remember?
I don't know if I have permission to tell the story, but I was walking to set with Lynette one day, and she was talking about some travel she did on her own as a young female through Europe and some of the challenges she faced. And I'd actually be really keen to get them on the podcast. She has quite an amazing story about some of the things she's achieved in her life.
Mm-hmm.
They are definitely inspiring people. I particularly remember that moment with her, but it's their actions over time that inspired me.
Great.
Fantastic.
How about you, Nick? Storyteller inspired you this year?
Yeah, I'm going to be cheeky. I know that you went quite local, but I feel like I'm going to go global with my storytellers here, and there might be more than one. So, three different people. First of all, Alejandro González Iñárritu, which you might know.
Five times quickly.
Yeah, I know, I couldn't. Don't even. But obviously, you know, director of Birdman and The Revenant is his latest. I just think that's a man at the top of his game doing some really original stuff as a director. So from that originality point of view, I really enjoyed him as a storyteller. Another guy, Tom Hardy. I think more for me, what he does with his characters and his X factor and charisma, there's just something in that I just can't get enough of. So I just watch anything that he's in.
Yep.
And then finally, Eddie Redmayne is another favourite of mine. Just an amazing storyteller with a real authenticity to his work.
Yeah, he has an amazing...
Yeah.
You can see right into him.
Yeah, it's like you can see his heart through his eyes.
Yes.
Don't quote me on that, but there it is. Yeah, so those three storytellers for me, all for different reasons, but have sort of struck a chord with me, not only for what they're doing, but also how I can then infuse that into what I do.
And so how are you infusing it into what you do?
Oh, great question.
we might replace you, Nick. Might get a new co-host.
I know. Gee, that was a great question. But I think by those things that I'm talking about, so, you know, Iñárritu, how am I bringing originality to my work?
Mm-hmm.
Authenticity. And also, how can you do something a little bit different as well,
which is
what Tom Hardy probably brings to his characters in my book when I watch him. I go, no one else could play that character quite like you because that's you. So I guess it's more around who he is as a person and bringing that into the role.
Sure.
Does that answer the question?
Yeah. So how, I guess...
Like practical.
Like what are you discovering in yourself that you're bringing to your work, that awesome authenticity and the original Nick Kane?
Yeah, totally. And I think, look, probably, you know, relates back to the answer to the first question in regards to, you know, I think as an artist, by removing myself from Melbourne, I really had to look at who I was as a person and as an artist. So I think just the process of moving and then examining that has started my thinking. I don't know if there's specific actions that I'm necessarily partaking in, but I think even little things like making that call is something that maybe I wouldn't have done, and maybe that's something that Tom Hardy might have done. I don't know, you know, but it's just these little things that you start finding about yourself and people like that inspire you, and you start to infuse a little bit of what they have into your own life.
And I mean, I guess both of you are moving into new worlds. Nick literally within the world into a new city, and Lauren into director, producer, writer roles.
Slashy.
I guess.
Multi-hyphenate.
Multi-hyphenate, yes. We've talked about this.
Do you find yourselves needing to steel yourselves in what you're about? In these new environments?
Yeah.
Like, of course, you need to. There's obviously a moment where you need to soften and accept new moments, but do you have to go, no, this is what I'm bringing, and this is why I want to be in this particular world now? That's a
bloody great question. You're taking my role. definitely. Don't you think?
I don't know if steal is the word that I would use.
Yeah.
I've talked to both of you about that I'm really trying to eradicate this idea of the word hard from my vocabulary, replace it with something that I seems a bit more energetically positive to me. And I think steal to me sounds a bit like bracing myself. And in this, on this path of things being simpler, trusting myself more, understanding where my stories begin and end with the stuff of lightness and warmth and love and all of that, I feel like maybe I'm doing the opposite of stealing. I have in previous years felt like I needed to steel myself to move forward with determination and will. I've talked to you, Nick. My approach to this year, I feel like I'm facing this year with quite a bit of uncertainty. Normally by now I've sat down and I'm like, by this day I'll have achieved this and I will have had this many auditions and done this and this and this. And there are quite a few creative projects ongoing now in my life that I'm in the centre of that with a bit more clarity. And so therefore it is a bit simpler, or maybe, and things change, right? We'll talk about this in 3 months and I'll feel completely different.
And steel is probably too strong a word. I guess maybe protect, but also exude that thing in you that isn't as an artist, that light and warmthness. Like you kind of have to, I guess there are going to be people that are going like, no, people want dark and gritty. You can't just be light and warm.
Again, I actually feel like how I want to combat that is with this idea of opening up.
Awesome.
The more I give out, the more vulnerability. You know, and those are all challenges.
And
sometimes it's they're easier than others. But the more I do that that's actually the way to continue to move forward and grow.
Awesome. How about you, Nick, in your new environment?
Yeah, I actually, you know, I guess it all depends how you look at the word steal. Because I looked at that. I do think I'm stealing myself in a lot of sense. I was thinking more of the metal, like just having the ability not to necessarily clench with the stealing, but just to wear it almost, you know, as like a strength. So I think I'm definitely stealing myself in different ways. New experiences. I think one of the things, and I keep going, Chad, you'll experience this, but you have to put yourself.
It's that old father and son relationship,
isn't it? I'm like, what?
Tell me more, Nick.
Yeah. It's not like he hasn't moved to like Singapore, but yeah, you have to put yourself out there in a new place, don't you? And it's one of those things that I think for the first 3 months I felt like I hid inside, just going, what is this place? What is this place that's always hot and beautiful beaches?
I never have that problem.
But then you start to go, the only way this is going to work is by putting yourself out there, and there's that vulnerability, but also being ready for that. So that's the stealing element for me.
Nice.
And I'm not saying that steal is a negative word. I'm just like, maybe, how would I phrase this, what I'm doing
what's
right
your
now?
Image? Yeah,
exactly. What's your own perspective on it? So, yeah.
And what do you guys got for 2016? What's coming up in the year ahead?
2016.
I know I said I didn't have a list. Okay.
Oh, you do have literally a list. This is so Lauren Bailey right now.
Okay, fantastic. I might have a list.
Yeah.
But it's not as
you're going to achieve this by this date and have this many auditions?
It's not as specific as my list normally is.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
What do I want in the year ahead?
Very good.
I want to be working in the Australian television industry. Mm-hmm. I want my short film to go to the Cannes Film Festival in competition.
Yeah.
I want to make a series with the short film as a pilot first episode. I want to be auditioning consistently and to be financially stable enough to pursue the creative projects I choose. In other words, I don't know, but I'm excited about finding out.
Mm-hmm. You do know. That was quite an extensive list. That was great.
And I think you're on the path. That sounds like the logical next steps of the things that you've been building on in the year gone by.
I mean, that's really exciting to me. I keep talking to people as if my film is in competition in Cannes, which cracks me up.
Yes.
And in a few weeks, we'll have the answer to that.
Yeah.
But it has made me realise something really awesome, you know, whether the film gets into the Cannes Film Festival or not, to have made a film.
Yeah.
That's really exciting. It's like, what else can I do?
Yeah. And you're aiming right for the top.
Yeah.
Like, there's no shame in going, like, this is what I wanted, this is the level I want to be at, and working towards that.
Yay. But, you know, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, you've written a list. I don't have a list, so mine's a little bit more esoteric than that, maybe, I guess. What do I want for 2016? Okay. I think I take a little bit of inspiration from you here, Lauren Bailey, in the sense that seeing you get your film to where it has got to and the will and drive and love that you've given it really makes me want to start doing more of my own projects and trusting my voice within those projects. Mm-hmm. So much like you did, you went, you know what? Nah, I'm going to do this. I'm going to write a script and I'm going to get this film made. And I remember that phone call. I think what I want for this particular year, and I've spoken about a little bit around trusting an idea that I have, getting it up and getting people to believe in that story and that idea and getting it made. That's from a more sort of storyteller perspective. As an actor, I want what every actor wants, a bit of work. That's what I want to be working. So, look, I'll work on my list now that I know that Lauren Bailey has a list, but that's what I want out of 2016.
Really exciting. Emily likes to say that this is a year for movers and shakers. things are happening. Everyone's getting on into the party.
Totally. Yeah.
I know that you guys had mystery questions for each other.
Oh, we were going to do.
Do you remember your wild card question? Do you want to ask each other your wild card question if you still got it?
Okay, I do. I do have a question. This one's directed at you, Lauren Bailey. Because I get to ask this question to everyone else and I finally get to ask this to you. If 2016 was to be a movie that you wanted to get funding for, tell us how you would pitch it. Your 2016. What do you think about that, Chelsea?
What a ripper question.
Slightly unhinged, dramatic, heartfelt comedy about a surprising individual who decides she is going to take on the world and make awesome things happen.
Where is my wallet?
Yep.
How much do you need?
Sign that check.
Great answer. I love it.
Okay, well, my wildcard question for you is, what aspect of yourself as a storyteller are you most keen to work on and build and develop in the year ahead?
Okay. Hard one. Ooh, now I know how people feel when they're like, that's a huge question. Okay. You know what it is? I was actually thinking about this the other day, and it's telling stories on screen. So I want to actually learn much more about direction. I feel like I know quite a lot, but I feel like there's also a lot of technical shot-based stuff that I don't know. I was actually thinking the other day, you know what? You really got to learn a little bit more about going through that process of piecing together a story for screen. I think more from a technical perspective than anything. I want to understand more.
That's exciting.
I'm with you there.
Yeah, I just think it's...
I love having James Barker on board to do my films. Like, he just...
Yeah.
But he knows all that stuff and how to visually communicate what I'm trying to do as a director. Yeah. But it's just part of the discussion that I can't be a part of, like,
I trust him
fully.
That's the thing, being that part of that discussion, because that's what I want to be. When you're on the film set, I want to be part of that discussion going, hey, this is what we maybe should try, or maybe try this lens, or maybe try this, you know, like that stuff I want to be a part of. So, yeah, it's being part of that discussion.
Awesome.
Very cool.
So that's it for tonight, guys. Do you want to wrap us up?
Like, I'm going to turn the cafe lights off.
You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here.
Thanks so much for interviewing us today, Chad. This has been a lot of fun. And I hope our listeners have enjoyed it as much as, well, I have.
Yeah, it's something a little different. I think we'll go back to our normal format next month. But yeah. Look,
what are you talking about.
So we'll just talk to each other about that after.
Chatted now. Taking my spot. Here's new nickname.
So we will be back next month in probably a few weeks' time.
But until that time, remember you can find us on the usual channels, which is the website www.theactofstorytelling.com.au. The about.me page is still there. Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, iTunes.
Check out the blog. Join the conversation on our Facebook page.
Totally. There's also a survey there. Let us know what you're thinking about.
And in the meantime,
continue to join us on The Act of Storytelling.
Thanks for listening.